This clip was recorded for the UK Wine Show. For more information about the UK Wine Show, you can go to ukwineshow.co.uk. Hi, I'm here in Haute Côte de Nuit with Olivier Gard. How are you, Olivier?
Ça va bien, merci.
Once again, Olivier is not a fantastic English speaker, so we have Olivier Norman here to help us out.
Hello.
Hello.
Me again. Sorry.
You're getting the hang of it now, Olivier. You produce both whites and reds and also some Cremant, which is quite interesting. In fact, I really liked your Cremant. I thought it was really good. But do you want to tell us a wee bit about yourself? You're not from a winemaking family. So do you want to tell us a bit about how you got into making wine?
Donc effectivement je ne suis
pas. So yes, I'm not a son of growers, but when I was young, when during the Sunday lunch or Sunday evening, when the father or the grandfather was opening a Nuit Saint-Georges or Von Romane, I recognized each village wine. So my father said, oh, he will probably be a wine grower. And slowly but surely, I became a wine grower.
Excellent. How did you get into it? Because obviously, land takes a while to accumulate. And how many hectares have you got now?
So I've got 11 hectares now between the Haute Côte, but also the Côte de Nuit and Côte de Beaune.
And do you buy grapes or do you use just the grapes from your own land?
Yeah, no, the 11 hectares are the own domain. And he's also buying 2 hectares of different village and premier cru, because it's very difficult to buy such land and very expensive. So he's buying grape, and it does not belong to him.
When you got into making wine, did you study enology or did you just have a go and see what happened?
I studied till I was 16 years old. I studied agriculture. Farming, and during 5 years, I started to work in oenology, but just you know during vinification in different domains in Switzerland, planting a vineyard in Switzerland with people, and then I started really to work and study oenology. And I finished quite recently with because I became oenologue. Quite recently, with the national diploma, French diploma of oenologue, So I'm still learning.
Yeah, sure, that's a good way to be. When did you first buy your vineyard, though, or when did you first make your first wines? Was it while you were still studying oenology, or was it afterwards?
What I did first is to buy a vineyard and to try myself on my own to vinify the wines, and year after year, I realized that I missed some. Technical basics. So I learned oenology. So I've got the vineyards for 15 years now. And finally, I just finished my diploma 2 years ago. So you can see I really started with buying and improving myself after.
Have you seen the quality of the wines improve as you've studied? Or is it more about not making mistakes?
Of course, the wines improved. Yeah, year after year, but I would say it's coming from two different points. The first is the knowledge you are learning by yourself. Also, you are doing mistakes, and from these mistakes, you are learning to not to do them once again. And on the other side, I realized that I needed the basics in terms of oenology, chemistry, etc., to work on my own and not to have any oenologist or consultant, foreign consultant coming to tell you have to do that or you have to do that. Now I managed to do everything myself. I got enough knowledge and technical knowledge to do what I want. I would say to give my artistic side, to give a full expression in my wine. I'm currently becoming consultant for the others.
The student is becoming the master. Start quoting Star Wars. Okay, we've tried some of your wines, and you make quite a range of wines, whites, reds, even Cremant. What's your favorite wine that you make?
I'm quite pleased with all my whites, and they were the first whites I really managed to do as I wanted. Among all the range of wines I'm producing, I would say my favorite is the Vosne Romanée Premier Cru Les Damodes, which is the closest from the winery. It's 1.2-1.3 miles from here. It's a very interesting terroir, and the result produced is really very interesting, and I think my favorite.
One of the things that you do with your wines, which is a wee bit unusual, is that you take the yeast and you take it away from the wines, then give it a good stir up and add some oxygen, and then pour it back into the wine. What's the reason for that?
Among the rare people to use a new method called the travail des lits, the aim is really to give a good depth to the wine, good length, without destructuring the wine. So the system is relatively simple. Once the wine is fermented, we take the lees.
That's the dead yeast.
Yes. So we take the lees off the wine because we do not want to move the wine and to give too much oxygen to the wine to kill the structure of the wine. The most important is to oxygen the lees to allow the lees after to be done with the wine. So during 2 weeks, we agitate, we move the lees to give them, to feed them with lots of oxygen, to over-oxygen the lees. And of course, working on the lees allows to break the cell walls. And once it's done, we reincorporate the lees in the wine to avoid any reduction with the wine. In Burgundy, we are only 3-4 people to use that. And now more and more, some growers are asking me to use this technique to help them to improve their wine.
I suppose it's a bit like leaving a wine, for example, in Champagne, they leave the wine on the lees, and after about 18 months or so, the lees cell will start to break down. So it sort of speeds up that process, allowing the autolysis, the sort of amino acids, to come out of the lees and go into the wine at a faster pace. Is that right?
Yes, you're absolutely right. In Champagne, it's done in a bottle. The most important in this process is the surface of contact between the lees. You know, in a bottle, it's very small, so the lees are in contact a lot with the wine, and it can happen very smoothly, even if sometimes the grower can move a little bit the bottle just to respan the lees everywhere. When you are in a tank, the surface of contact between the lees and the wine smaller compared to the bottle, so you need to activate the lees before, and when you have reincorporated the lees, to continue to move them also. It's similar in terms of process. The aim is not to move the wine as we can. But because of the volume, we are working slightly differently.
Yeah, no, that's fine. I really liked your Crémant de Bourgogne. I usually find Crémant to be quite acidic, quite thin, and not very nice. Whereas yours had a lovely richness, almost a toasty note on the wine as well. How long have you been making sparkling wines?
So I experienced the sparkling vinification during my first year of traveling and experiencing different things. And in 93, the second year when I bought the domain, I started sparkling Crémant. So it's about 13 years now that I'm working on the Crémant. White Crémant, Brut, which I think is now at its best. And for 2 years, I started to vinify Rosé, 100% Pinot Noir. So I'm still learning for this one. It will be at its best in the next year.
Let's talk a wee bit about where you are. We're in the Haute Côte de Nuits. First of all, Haute Côte de Nuits, what does it mean in English?
High slopes of Nuits, of Nuits Saint-Georges. You got two Haute Côtes. Haute Côte means high slope. You got the northern side, which is Haute Côte de Nuits, and the southern side, which is Haute Côte de Beaune. Haute Côte de Nuits around Nuits Saint-Georges, Haute Côte de Beaune around Beaune. and haute côte because the all the vineyards are planted at the top of the slopes compared to the classic côte, and we are 150 to 200 meter altitude more compared to the other vineyards. And so it means also that the harvest here takes place 2 or 3 weeks after the harvest in Nuit Saint-Georges or Gevrey-Chambertin.
What does having the grapes higher up mean to compared to maybe lower down?
In Burgundy, everything is an alchemy between the soil and the climate. And so the soils here are less deep compared to down. So, and the climate is cooler. So it means that the harvest can take place 2 weeks after the coat. And it also means the combination of the two means also that we have less structured wine, less deep wine. And we have more pleasure, easy drinking and fruity wines compared to the other one.
We tried some of your Pommard, and we also tried some Pommard earlier with Pierre Boyeau. And whilst the nose was very, very similar, the structure on the mouth was quite different. Yours was a lot more tannic and slightly more aggressive as well, I thought. What's driving that? Why do you think your structure is slightly different?
I would say that it's really our aim to have this characteristic, because the domain itself is producing lots of haute côte de nuit, which, as I said, are quite light and fruity wines. And for all the appellation village and premier cru, I really wanted to have deep, strong wines reflecting strongly their appellations. And I think it's the reason why they are like that, more tannic, more depth. And also do not forget that for all the wines from the côte, 50% are stoked and 50% are not stoked. Given once again, because I want it, this astringence and these tannins which are giving the style of wine I'm looking for.
So you're getting some of the tannins from the stalks, not just from the grape skins.
Exactly. With, of course, the élevage sur lit, using the lees to compensate this astringency with the weight and the fruit of the wine to sweeten and counterbalance the astringents and the tannins.
That's using that lees. So you're taking, again, for your reds, you're taking the lees away, mixing them up, and then reintroducing them as well.
Exactly.
Because lees, when you age a wine on lees, often you get a fatness and a richness from it. And is that counteracting the tannins?
Exactly. It will be a balance between the two.
Excellent. Okay. What's your favorite region in Burgundy? And your favorite wine?
Got really my roots in this terroir of the Haute Côte de Nuit. I'm born there, I'm working there, I'm vinifying there. My favorite, I would say, is Von Romanée with its terroir, fantastic terroir of Von Romanée. In terms of white, I would say in the Côte des Blancs, in the Côte de Beaune, my favorite is the Puligny-Montrachet.
You've obviously done some experimentation with lees. Is there anything you're experimenting with at the moment that you may introduce or you're trying to work through problems with?
So, yes, my work on the lees, I'm finalizing my work on the lees currently. I started 5 years ago, so I'm still improving a little bit the techniques, but it's not completely finalized. But what I'm working currently and now for 2 years on the selection of the grapes during the harvest, when the grapes are just arriving at the winery, and selection by density to make a selection between the very ripe bunches, less ripe bunches. Once again, to improve the selection on the raw grape. Because when you got the best grape at the beginning, then your wine will be the best at the end. So it's really a work at the beginning of all the process, that I'm improving currently.
It's a triage. Is that the right word?
Yeah, but it's more complicated than triage. Yeah, it's even on the same bunch, you select perhaps 10 very ripe berry, and you leave the others. So of course, as you said, there is a triage, a selection at the beginning, but the selection is more accurate. You take all the berries. You are using a big vat with sugar, a liquid with a rate of sugar given, and you put all the berries in this liquid. So when the berry got more sugar than the liquid, which is the aim, the berry is falling down, mm-hmm. And it means that the berry is very ripe with more sugar. If the berry has not enough sugar or less sugar compared to the liquid, then the berry stays at the top. Yep. And then you can make your selection. You put off all the berry at the top of the liquid and you just keep the one falling down.
Oh, okay, I've never heard that. Does that...
It's new, it's a secret. Do not mention that.
Don't broadcast it to my listeners. Are you not worried about the berries absorbing the liquid that you're putting them in?
The liquid is indeed the juice of all the grapes.
So the berries, I'm just a wee bit confused. The berries, have you done a free run juice? You've done a light press and got the free run juice?
No, natural juice.
Okay, so you de-stem, you get some juice. And then you put not all the berries, obviously, because you won't have a huge amount of juice. So you put some berries in, the ones that float in the juice, you separate out, and the ones that sink. And then you put another lot of berries into the juice, and then do the selection that way.
So yes, it's a small vat of 200 liters. So when you got the juice, you put
some grapes.
You make the selection. After you bring new grapes, you make the selection, etc., etc. Okay.
Are you worried about oxidation? Because obviously, you'll need to, what do you use carbon dioxide in there to stop the juice from oxidizing? Are you worried about that?
It's protected by SO2, so there is no risk of oxidation.
Sulfur dioxide. Okay. All right. That's interesting. How's that going?
It's difficult to put in place, but the results are very, very good.
So obviously you're doing a nice selection on your grapes. What do you do with the lower quality ones and versus the higher quality ones?
I'm doing two separate cuvées because the berries are like that. They are producing two different styles. The riper one is producing a long deep wines with lengths quite deep, and the less ripe one are producing more lighter and fruitier wines, and so after I decide if I blend, if I keep the two cuvées. It really depends according to the results I get. The way of working the two cuvées are of course different.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so it's interesting. That is quite interesting. I've never heard anybody doing that before.
That's why you are here.
Excellent. All right, I think we'll wrap it up there. Thank you very much for your time, Olivia. And Olivia. Cheers.
Cheers. Beaucoup. Bye.